nanohub.org.
You can follow along with this presentation using printed slides from the NanoHub. Visit www.nanohub.org and download the PDF file containing the slides for this presentation. Print them out and turn each page when you hear the following sound. Enjoy the show.
Continuing our discussion of very small MOSFETs, and we ended the last lecture by establishing that a small silicon MOSFET operates at over 50% of the ballistic limit for on current. That means it's reasonably close to the ballistic limit, too close really for diffusive theory like drift diffusion really to work, but there's definitely some carrier scattering going on. So we have to talk about how we think about that. Now, this is where the problem gets difficult and where you really need numerical simulations. So what we can simply talk about is the essence of the problem, why things work out the way they do, and how you interpret a numerical simulation. And I'm going to present some material very briefly that's taken from this longer short course. So if you want to hear more about scattering, I refer you to that one again. So we'll review a little bit what we covered in the last lecture. Then I'll present this theory of the MOSFET, and then we'll talk about that theory a little bit. So here's the IV characteristic that we derived, and that thing in the red box needs a W, so we'll go and fix that later on. And the IV characteristics look just like a transistor, and the on current has a familiar expression, and the linear region current looks a little bit different, but we've talked about that also. And we talked about how if we're going to use this in practice for numbers, we would really deal with the version that doesn't assume Boltzmann statistics, and we deal with Fermi-Dirac intervals. And we mentioned that ballistic transport means that things zip across the channel without encountering anything. They gain a lot of kinetic energy, but then they deposit all of that energy in the drain, immediately scatter and relax. Now, when the channel length is very long, then we have this diffusive condition. And the difficulty is we're somewhere between these two limits, right? And that's what we have to talk about. This is what we would call quasi-ballistic, not quite ballistic, definitely not fully diffusive, not long enough. And we want to figure out how we understand what's going on here. Now, one way that people use to treat these kinds of problems in very short devices is to think about transmission coefficients. So you do transmission coefficients when you do wave problems. And a transmission coefficient might be a complex thing. We're only talking about particles here. Remember, we're not talking about quantum mechanical particles. So there's no phase. But we can still talk about the probability that if an electron is injected from the source into the channel at some energy E, what's the probability that that injected flux comes out the other side? And I would call that T from contact 1 to contact 2 at energy E times what came in. And it would be some number between 0 and 1. Okay. And the rest would just go back to the source. That would be the reflection coefficient or backscattering coefficient. And if nothing disappears anywhere, then the two have to add up to what came in. So R is just 1 minus T. Okay. And we can do the same thing. If a flux comes in from the drain, some fraction of it, T contact 2 to contact 1, some fraction T 2 to 1 at energy E will come out the other side. That's a number between 0 and 1. And some of it will backscatter and return to the drain. Okay. Now, one of the things you can show if you take a course like 656 and carrier transport is you can show that when we have elastic scattering, that these two are the same. If an electron comes in at an energy E from the source, its probability of transmitting across T1 to 2 is exactly equal to the probability that if an electron comes in at the same energy from the drain, that it will transmit in the opposite direction. T sub 1, 2 is equal to T sub 2, 1. So that's something that happens when the scattering is elastic, simplifies things, then I'll only just talk about a T. In general, that isn't valid because we'll have these inelastic processes. Some of the current will transmit through at the same energy it came in at. Some will like emit lattice vibrations and transmit through at lower energies. A few might absorb lattice vibrations and transmit through at higher energies. So this is what we would call inelastic scattering. The energy is changing as it's going from source to the drain. In that case, this relation doesn't work, and the problem gets much more difficult. If you're interested in understanding that, you should see Professor Dada's book on mesoscopic conduction in electronic systems, something like that, his green book from Cambridge. That's a much more difficult problem to handle. We're not going to treat that. It turns out we can do pretty well without treating that. And I'll probably try to explain why in a minute. So how do we think about this? Okay, so we have our barrier. We have a top of the barrier. We have some electronic states at the top of the barrier. The easiest way I can think of them is there's some band structure. There's some effective mass. There's some energy versus K that's h bar squared k squared over 2m. In the ballistic case, electrons came in and they filled up the positive K states or the positive velocity states. Some electrons came in from the drain. The Fermi level was lower, so they filled up a few negative velocity states. Well, the electrons are still going to come in from the source and fill up those states just like they did before, because they're right by the source. They're going to come in and fill up they're going to come in from the drain and fill up the negative velocity states, but they're not going to fill them up quite as well, because there'll be some probability T that they can transmit across to that point and fill those up, and T will be less than 1. So there'll be fewer of them there, but there'll be some there. But then there'll be a third type of carriers. These would be electrons that came in from the source, backscattered, turned around, and then went back to the source. Now they have negative velocities. So they're filling up negative velocity states. So we have all of those states. We have two similar ways that they're filled, and one different way that wasn't present at all. Okay, that's really all we need to know about scattering to develop the theory, but then we'll have to talk about how we understand it. Yes?
Would the filling of those states be the same in case of any other band structure, or is this valid only for a parabolic assumption?
Oh, no, it's valid for any band structure. And you can always, so it's very interesting, you can always, in the ballistic case, you can always divide the states into two kinds, no matter what its band structure is. Some kind that are filled by one contact, and some kind that are filled by the other contact. There's never a case where the same state is being filled by both. Now, in scattering, it's a little more difficult because everything gets mixed up. But you can formulate the problem for any band structure. It's just the bookkeeping about how they're all filled becomes more complicated. Yeah. Okay, so we're going to try to do a very simple analytical treatment of this. So I'm not going to resolve things in energy space because that would be a numerical solution. So I'm just going to average T. So T will just be a number. It's the average transmission of the electrons that are coming in from the source. I'm going to use Boltzmann statistics, even though I know it's wrong, because it makes things a lot easier. I'm going to assume that T sub 1, 2 is equal to T sub 2, 1. So that only works for elastic scattering. But if I have small drain bias, then the device is symmetrical, so it should still work. And if I have large drain bias, then there won't be anything transmitted from the drain over to the source, so it won't matter that I don't know what it is. So you can really get by pretty well with that assumption. And I have to make some other assumption that when the electrons come in and with some average velocity Vt and they backscatter, their average velocity is also Vt. Okay, people worry about that. You can sometimes find 20% differences. But that's a detail you need a numerical simulation to treat. Okay, so we have some average flux coming in. Some fraction T goes out the drain. Some fraction R goes back to the source. Sum of T plus R is equal to 1. That just means we do our bookkeeping and nothing disappears. And the injected flux, this comes in just before, thermionically emitted over the barrier from the source, just like it was before. So it's the number with positive carriers times that ballistic injection velocity. All right, so now we do a little bit of bookkeeping here. So how does equation 1 work? Before we do that, let's set the problem up. So I know that the current is always going to be the difference between the positive flux and the negative flux, just like it was in the ballistic case. And I can factor out NS plus and VT, just like I did in the ballistic case, and I get an expression that's identical to what it was in the ballistic case. Okay. And I know that the sum of the two is the total number of carriers, and that's going to be related to the COX VG minus VT. So that's just like it was in the ballistic case. No changes. We haven't done anything about this scattering yet. So the expression that I get then when I put equations 1 and 2 together is identical to what I got in the ballistic case. It's just I have to be a little more careful about this ratio of NS minus to NS plus. It was easy to do in the ballistic case. I have to be a little bit more careful about it now. So let's take a look at that. So the positive carriers are injected ballistically just like they were before, no difference. The negative carriers, well, they were injected ballistically. There were e to the minus q VDS over kt of them fewer than the positive because the barrier was higher. But now I also have to multiply by this t, the fraction, the probability that they can get across to the top of the barrier. So that reduces the number of negative velocity carriers. Okay, then I've got this third component. The injected flux was I1. R times I1 is what turns around and goes back to the source with a negative velocity. If I take R times I1, which is the flux going back to the source, or the current going back to the source, divide by Q, now it's the flux going back to the source, divide by velocity, then I've got the number with negative, I have the number of electrons with negative velocities. Okay. So NS minus now, instead of just being this ratio, NS plus times this ratio, it's the sum of this term from the drain plus that term from backscattering. So I add up all of those contributions. I have a contribution that is due to backscattering. I have a contribution that's due to transmission from the drain contact. And when I add the two together, I have an R for the first contribution, and I'll write T as 1 minus R. Okay. Now when I do the ratio, I'll just take NS minus over NS plus. It'll be R times 1 minus R e to the minus q VDS over KT. If there's no scattering, then R is 0. So it's 0 plus that exponential factor. That's what I had in the ballistic case. Okay, now I go to my expression for the current, which is exactly what it was in the ballistic case, and I just use this different ratio of negative to positive carriers, and this is the expression that I get. Okay, it's a little more complicated, but, you know, it was very easy to derive this ballistic IV. Now we've done a little bit of bookkeeping with backscattering, and we have something that looks a little more complicated, but it's not too bad. Okay. Okay, so that's the expression. Remember that T is 1 minus R, so I could express it in terms of either transmission coefficients or reflection coefficients. Either way, whatever I prefer, R's or T's. You'll see it done both ways. Okay. Now, it's interesting. You might have guessed that, well, I would just take what I had in the ballistic case and I would just multiply it by a fraction T. It tells me how much can transmit across. What we got is a bit more complicated. And that comes because of all of this necessity of balancing all of this charge so that the total charge ends up being C ox Vg minus Vt. That's where it comes from. Okay, so we can take this general expression now. This is what I would call a scattering model for the MOSFET. And we can examine it for high VDS. And the expression that we get is the old ballistic expression, but now not modified, not multiplied by T, but multiplied by T over, I guess that's 2 minus T, or 1 minus R over 1 plus R. So I can interpret this as width times inversion layer charge times velocity. And the average velocity now is always less than the ballistic velocity. If R is 0, this is the ballistic velocity. If R is positive, it ends up being less. It's going to be less because now I'm averaging some positive velocities and some negative backscattered velocities. So the overall average is going to be smaller. If I look at the low VDS regime and look at the channel resistance, I can expand this e to the minus x for small x, and I get an expression that's exactly like the ballistic case, but in this case, it's just multiplied by T, what you would have guessed. Because under that condition, there's no difficulty in making the total charge Vg minus Vt. I don't have to balance all of that out. Okay. So to summarize, we could put Fermi-Dirac statistics in, and it's a bit hard to do this rigorously, but you can sort of see what it should be approximately. Just everywhere I had an exponential, I'll put a Fermi-Dirac integral. So the ballistic or the channel resistance would be the expansion of this for small VDS, and the on current would be just what we had before, but we would use this gate voltage dependent or Fermi level dependent velocity instead of it being a constant value. Okay, so that's the model. It's relatively easy to derive the IV characteristics, but we really haven't gotten anywhere unless we can understand what R is and how it depends on scattering. Okay, so that's really, we have the IV characteristic of the MOSFET with scattering. Now we just have to talk about those T's and R's and see if we can relate them to some physical parameters and understand where they come from. So the first way to do that is under low VDS and to assume that the electric field in the channel is very small so I can ignore it. But let's assume that there is some average mean free path. That's the average distance between scattering events. It might be very short, and there might be many scattering events before an electron goes across this channel. Or it might be very long, and there might be very little probability that there'll be any scattering. Doesn't matter, right? There's no assumption. Okay. So there ought to be some relation. You would think that the shorter the mean free path is, the harder it's going to be to transmit across. Okay. So this is something that you can derive relatively easily. It's in that short course that's online. I'm just going to give you the answer. The answer is really simple and easy to remember and comes in useful frequently. So you might want to remember it. It's T is mean free path over mean free path plus channel length. So you can see that when the channel length is much longer than the mean free path, there's a lot of scattering in the channel. And the probability of transmission gets to be very small. That makes sense. When the channel length is much shorter than the mean free path, T goes to 1. And almost everything that's injected comes out the other side because there's very little probability that there'll be any scattering in there. Okay. So this is ballistic. Oh, I'm sorry. This is diffusive. Channel length is long. And this is ballistic. Or we could do quasi-ballistic, which would be anywhere in between. Now, this mean free path may not be something, it's something that we need to know in order to compute T or R. And how do we get that? So here again, I'm not, I'm not going to do the derivation. This is something we do. Again, I think you can look in that online short course, or you can take EE656. It turns out that there is a simple relation between the mean free path and the diffusion coefficient, or equivalently, the mobility. Scattering is what determines the value of the mobility, or the diffusion coefficient. So we expect D or mu to be related to the mean free path. And it turns out that there's a very simple relation. The diffusion coefficient is half of this thermal velocity times the mean free path. So it's centimeters per second times centimeters. So that's centimeters squared per second. That's the units of a diffusion coefficient. So if I know the mobility, I can multiply by kT over Q and get the diffusion coefficient. And then I can easily find out what the mean free path is. Okay. So let's say we have low VDS. Let's say the mobility is about 200, which is a typical number these days. I can relate that mobility. kT over Q times that mobility was a diffusion coefficient. And the diffusion coefficient is VT divided by 2 times lambda naught. So I can solve that expression for the mean free path. It's about 9 nanometers. Okay. That was 100. Well, okay, so today for a 50 nanometer channel length, it's about a 15% effect. Okay. For a 100 nanometer channel length, the one I showed you the data for, it was less than a 10% effect. Okay. So about 10 to 15% of the electrons that are injected from the source come out the drain. So that's pretty diffusive. It's not really very close to ballistic. Not for silicon. For gallium arsenide, it would be much, much closer. Now, we could also relate this channel conductance to conventional theory. This expression looks a lot different than any conventional theory. But 1 minus R is T, and T is lambda over lambda plus L. And if there's a lot of scattering and we're in the diffusive limit, T is just lambda divided by channel length. So I can put that T into the first expression. And since the mean free path is related to the mobility, I could repackage everything in terms of mobility. And what would I get? You know, I'd get what I'm supposed to get. I would get the traditional expression that's valid in the diffusive limit. Right? So, you know, this expression here is just a special case of a more general expression. What's nice about this scattering model is that it not only works in this limit, but it works in the ballistic limit, and it works anywhere in between. So let's see. You know, if I don't simplify this for the ballistic limit, but if I just deal with it as lambda over lambda plus L, then you could do a little bit of algebra and re-express these mobilities in terms re-express these mean-free paths in terms of mobilities, and you would find the channel conductance is given by an expression like this. This is what I wrote down before, just saying this is plausible. The ballistic mobility or the real mobility, whichever one is smaller, is going to be the important one. Okay, but you can derive it from this. That's where it comes from. Okay. So low bias is very nice because things are very solid and it really works very well. And you can almost calculate things analytically, and you don't need lots of sophisticated simulations. High bias is where things get more complicated, and you really need those detailed simulations to do it properly. But remember, what happens under high bias is that our on current is given by WCox VG minus VT times this ballistic injection velocity, which in general depends on where the Fermi level is, times 1 minus R over 1 plus R, which is the same as T over 2 minus T. Okay. And what we find is that if we take the measured current and divide by the ballistic current when T is 1, the ratio is 50% or greater, not 10%, the way it is in the low VDS, but 50%. We're actually 60 or 70% these days. So it's a lot closer to the ballistic limit. So if you deduce from this ratio of the measured current to the ballistic current what the T is. The T is 67% or so. So that's quite high. Now instead of 10 to 15% of them transmitting across, two-thirds are transmitting across. Okay, so why is that? What's changed? Now we have an electric field that's much, much bigger. And when we have these strong electric fields, we get this velocity overshoot and all kinds of complicated transport, and it gets to be a really interesting and difficult transport problem. But let's see if there's a way to get a grasp on how it works. I guess I'll mostly show you the answer about what happens when you do a detailed simulation. What people have found when they do those simulations is that if you inject the flux of carriers into a region that has a very high electric field, the carriers will start to scatter and undergo a random walk, but almost all of them will come out the other side. T is very close to 1. So the high field region is a really good collecting region. What matters is a region right near the beginning where there's just a very small potential drop. If it scatters there, it has a chance to get back over the barrier and into the source. If it scatters in the other part, it's as though it hasn't scattered at all because it can't get over the barrier and back out. Okay. So what this leads us to suggest is that what we should say is that it's the transmission is not mean free path over mean free path plus channel length, because most of the channel length doesn't matter. If a carrier scatters down here, very difficult for it to get over the barrier and back. It's in this high field region near the drain, it's going to get turned around and swept out the drain. The only thing that matters is if it scatters in some small fraction of the channel near the source. If it scatters there, it has a chance to turn around and go back to the source. So that's the only scattering that matters as far as the transmission is concerned. So we expect this critical region to be some small fraction of the channel length. So the physical picture is this, that in this MOSFET, we have a small low field region near the source end of the channel. We have a high field region near the drain end of the channel. This is the critical part. If it scatters in this small part of the channel at the beginning, then it really can hurt the current a lot and turn around and go back. But if it scatters in the high field region, some charge will build up there and will affect the profile through Poisson's equation, but the effect is greatly diminished. So the transmission is controlled by this bottleneck region, right near the top of the barrier or at the beginning of the channel. And scattering near the drain has a smaller effect. So under low drain bias, the way we understand the transmission is that it's mean free path over mean free path plus channel length, 10 to 15%. Under high drain bias, well, the mean free path in this low field region is the same. It's still a low field region. The entire channel was low field then. It's just that the length of that low field region is much smaller. So the fraction that transmit across that very short region is much higher. Now, once it scatters here, there's a lot more scattering near the drain. The mean free path is much, much shorter. But that doesn't matter. They're not going to get back up over the hump and out into the source. Okay, so just talk a little bit about how this connects up to the traditional theory. So let me look at this in the diffusive limit, because then in the diffusive limit I can compare the result to the traditional theory, which assumes a lot of scattering, the drift diffusion theory. So in the diffusive limit, the transmission is mean free path divided by the length of that region, which is assumed to be much bigger than the mean free path. So I can take my expression for the current in terms of the transmission coefficient, and I can use this approximation that has a lot of scattering. And let's see, T will be small, so I can ignore the T here. And then I can relate T to lambda over L. So I have lambda over 2L. But I remember now mean free path times thermal velocity divided by 2 is diffusion coefficient. So the final result I get is that the current, the on current, is W times C aux, diffusion current divided by L. This has the units of velocity, times Vg minus Vt. So the way I interpret this is that this represents the velocity, average velocity, at which they diffuse across this thin bottleneck region. You know, normally when we do the square law theory and all this, we assume drift transport above threshold. So here I'm arguing that really in these very small devices, the carriers are diffusing across that bottleneck region. That's what's limiting the current. Then there's a big drift current here in the drain region, but all that does is sweep everything out. It doesn't really control the current. The current is controlled by diffusion across that beginning of the channel. Okay. So the physical picture is that the average velocity at the beginning of the channel is just D over L, and that's a bottleneck region that we diffuse across. Okay. So we could start with our general expression, and I could use my expression for T, lambda over lambda plus L, and then I could express mean free path in terms of diffusion coefficient, and then I could express diffusion coefficient in terms of mobility through an Einstein relation, and what would I get? I would get something like this, which says that it's W C aux Vg minus Vt, that's the charge, times a velocity. And it says it's the slower of two velocities that matters. So D over L represents the velocity that they're diffusing across the thin base, the thin bottleneck region of the channel. Physically, that can't be faster than the thermal velocity because diffusion is random thermal motion. Right? If I have a diffusion coefficient that's high or a bottleneck region that's very short and I put numbers in and it comes out to be 10 to the 8th, I know it's nonsense. Right? Because they were injected with the thermal velocity, they can't diffuse faster than the thermal velocity. So it's either the diffusion velocity if that's slow, or it's the thermal velocity if that's slow in comparison. Whichever one of those two is the slowest is the one that dominates it. Now, this is something, you know, people have done this for bipolar transistors since the early 1970s. They could make the base region of a bipolar transistor really thin. And they had to start worrying about things like this. And they just wrote this down sort of phenomenologically. Something like, I mean, they recognize that carriers can't diffuse faster than the thermal velocity, so they just put everything together in a way that nothing non-physical would ever happen. But you can see we can just derive it from the expression that we got. So there really is a, you know, we're describing the same physics ultimately. Electrons moving through a semiconductor under influence of scattering. So even though this looks much different from drift diffusion equations, in the end it has to end up being the same. Okay, so that's the whole story. These modern MOSFETs, they operate, they're rarely fully ballistic, although we are beginning to see some 3-5 transistors that are really close to ballistic. Silicon MOSFETs are also never fully diffusive. They're closer to the ballistic limit than they are to the diffusive limit these days. But there is some scattering, so you're in this in-between region, and you have to treat both. This transmission or scattering theory provides a simple physical way to think about this. It doesn't replace numerical simulations. You can relate this in when the device is long, it has to reduce to the conventional treatment, and I showed you how that happens also. But if you want real numbers for these, this is where people do these Monte Carlo simulations and all of the sophisticated numerical simulations. Okay, that's the story. Any questions?
For diffusive transport, you told the transmission coefficient T becomes zero.
Well, it becomes small, right? So I guess I would define diffusive transport to be when the transmission coefficient is mean free path divided by L. So it just gets smaller and smaller as the device gets longer and longer.
That means this current equation, we have to also take care of this diffusion current equation also. Because otherwise it will tell the current is becoming zero, it is tending to zero. I mean, since total current we can return proportional to T.
Well, remember, when I assume this, in the linear regime, right, where we had ID is proportional to VDS, when I made this assumption, what I got was W over L, mu effective, C ox, VG minus VT. As L goes to infinity in the normal one, the current goes to zero too, right? Transmission is going to zero. So when you make this assumption, it basically just says the channel resistance is proportional to the length.
When we use this term diffusive, is there something called this concentration gradient? It is not different.
So I'm using, and people frequently use the term, when you have an electric field and you think of the carriers as going at some velocity mu times the electric field, people frequently call that diffusive transport too. Because if you look at what's happening, the carriers are undergoing lots of scattering events. They're zipping around all kinds of random events. There's just slightly more probability that they're going to move in the direction of the electric field than against it. So on average, they're zipping around at 10 to the 7th centimeters per second, the thermal velocity. They have some small probability that the overall average is 10 to the third or something, orders of magnitude smaller. So people frequently call that diffusive when there's a lot of scattering. So it really is, it looks very similar. If there is a small electric field, they just have a slight tendency to drift in the direction of the electric field. If there's no electric field and there's a concentration gradient, they'll just diffuse down the gradient. But we frequently call both of those diffusive transport. Lots of scattering. Okay.
The slope in the IP characteristic, it is on. In the velocity case, we have seen it is zero. I mean, there is no channel length modulation.
Oh, no, there is. So your question is, this output conductance I've drawn here is zero. I drew it as zero in the square law theory also, right? It's just something that we haven't treated yet. We'll discuss that later on. Whether it's ballistic or whether it's diffusive, there's going to be some slope to the output conductance. And, the actual physics of it could be a little bit different in the two cases, but it's similar.